Here It Comes, the latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. I am Gina Murphy Darling, and I want to personally thank you for listening. I believe you'll be glad you did, because the name of our show today is What's Happening on the Black Mesa. And I'm sure if I did a little poll with many of you, you would not be able to answer that. And it's so relevant to many of the things that are happening in our nation today that are making headlines about power and oil and sacred land. So our special guest is in the know. But before we move on to her, and I'm not sure what that background noise is, I apologize for it. We're going to see if we can do anything about it. Just two short tips from our friends at Do More Blue in Tucson, and they are about recycling, which really matters. It's all part of the plan and the mission. So always make sure that whatever it is you are recycling is clean, no greasy, compromised pizza containers, that the containers are empty, so no food, no water, and that the materials are dry. It makes sense anyway, doesn't it? So just those three things, it doesn't make it harder. It just makes sense. And you don't have to take labels off. That's another good tip, off of containers or jars. It doesn't slow down the process if there are labels on them, and it saves you time so that recycling is really made easy. And I know in this day and age, we want easy and simple. And if you'd like more information, I invite you to visit tucsonaz.gov/do-more-blue. There's lots of good information about recycling, no matter where you are. And I highly recommend that you follow the Do More Blue page on Facebook, wherever you are, because it's a fun page. It often makes me laugh. They don't just have things on it about recycling, and it is actually a delightful page. So now on the show, on with the show, as they say in the business. My guest today is pretty much a powerhouse. I've had the pleasure of meeting her and hearing her speak. Her name is Jihan Giron. She is the executive director of the Black Mesa Water Coalition, and I'm sure that, in fact, she wears many hats. And they are involved in quite a few areas of major importance going on in our country today and in our world, like no coal and environmental justice programs. How's that for a good one? The Navajo Restorative Economy Program, and leadership development and movement building. The movements that have been building are finally, we're seeing impact, really, really incredible impact. So timely for this podcast. And Jihan, am I not right? Given what's going on with the Dakota Access Pipeline, we're going to be hashtagging the heck out of that. So thanks for being with us.
Thank you. And I've been hashtagging the heck out of it.
Yes,
already.
It brings up such really, I mean, it's like good news. I think a lot of us are really starved for good news, as it were. I don't think that's a dramatic statement at all. So let's start and make the show all about you and really cover as much as we can of the areas of work that you're involved in and where you're putting your time and energy. So tell us, it's always great to start, is what is the Black Mesa Water Coalition?
Yeah, well, Black Mesa Water Coalition is a nonprofit organization that started in 2001. And we started actually as a student group out of Northern Arizona University. And we started to address the issue of coal mining on a region of the Black Mesa called, or a region of the Navajo Nation called Black Mesa. And particularly Peabody Coal Company's use of the Navajo Aquifer, which sits under Black Mesa. So that's how we started, and since then we really evolved into a much more strong organization, and kind of continue to do our environmental justice work, but have also grown to do a lot of work around experimenting with economic development projects on Black Mesa, and around leadership development and movement building, as you said. So we're dedicated to preserving and protecting Mother Earth and the integrity of Indigenous peoples' culture, with the vision of building sustainable and healthy communities.
And you know, one of the questions I have, it's a different kind of, it's like evolution, the evolution of traditional environmental justice. You're taking it another step to transition, economic develop, organizing. Can you go into a couple of those areas? Because I saw on your Facebook page that you had, you asked people to join you for Flagstaff Solidarity a couple of days ago, and that's part of the movement piece. So tell us about what you think has changed traditionally, just in the time that you've been one of the leaders of this movement.
So, totally. It's changed a lot, and in a very good way. So when I first started getting involved in these issues, right out of college, or actually in college, so in the early 2000s, I found that our larger climate movement was really not diverse at all. And I found that they were mostly kind of your mainstream white environmental organizations, you know, Sierra Clubs and National Resource Defense Council and those types. And then there were environmental justice organizations. So those like the Indigenous Environmental Network and folks who worked around Cancer Alley in Louisiana. But that was about it, you know, and it was, I think, pretty trying because in terms of movement building and really believing that, yes, we need to build more than, you know, just the preaching to the choir few, it was pretty challenging because on the one hand, our mainstream environmental organizations were just mostly concerned about, you know, the straight up environment, national parks, things like that. When it came to issues of social justice, environmental racism, that was not something that they were very interested in working on. And on the other side, when you looked at social justice organizations, people who worked on issues with prisons, housing, etc., they would look at the issue of the environment and be like, well, that's not really our thing. Like, we live in cities. That's kind of like hippie stuff.
Right.
So it was, I think, a very small group of people, and these were the people who were directly impacted by, you know, these industries like the coal mines, power plants, oil refineries, etc. And we were kind of a small group, so I think it's taken since then, you know, years to kind of turn into a much broader movement. And I think that there's some really key moments in our recent history that pushed that. And I think particularly around the international climate negotiations was something that brought more people in, and particularly when the larger international movement began to talk about the issue of climate change from an anti-capitalist perspective, and identifying capitalism and kind of infinite growth and greed as the root cause of climate change, as it is the root cause of so many other negative things that communities face. And I think that's one of the major things that was able to bring people together and broaden our movement to what it is now.
And two thoughts come to mind to me about that, so relevant to everything that you're saying is to me, it's like stand up and cheer because the winds of change are blowing. But one is, one of the things that changed the face of how we do things recently that was a more modern protest concept was Occupy Wall Street. I mean, it got attention,
yeah.
it caught on in about 3 days, and what you said, what made me think of that is, I just read this book called The Yin and the Yang of Climate Change, and it's really, it's one of my favorite books ever, and it's it echoes what you said about this is all about greed and overconsumption. That is what climate change is about, and that is not what you hear. You hear about it's too many cars and CO2 emissions and too many cows, but the root cause,
right.
And he makes this Brandon Kelly, I think his name is, makes the point that what it's really about is, without shame, blame, or guilt, we're consuming too much, buying too much, eating too much of stuff that's making us really sick, and oh, P.S., we're getting sicker. So it's just another, to me, just echoes your observations about the timeliness of this and the way that things are changing. Is there anything else you want to comment about that, about the evolution? Because you can be sure I have many other questions.
I mean, I think we can move on to some other questions. I think maybe I can give some specific examples around our organization, too, and a little bit about how we've changed. like I said, we started to address Peabody Coal Company's use of the overuse of the Navajo Aquifer on Black Mesa. And we were part of a big success, which was to greatly reduce Peabody's use of water for transportation of coal from Black Mesa to the Mojave Generating Station. And so that happened in 2005, that the Mojave Generating Station was shut down, in part by our work and in part by other people's work, and it was a huge victory. But I think it was also like a very bittersweet moment for us, because our staff and, I mean, volunteers really at the time and people that we worked with are members of the Black Mesa community, so they received, you know, a lot of backlash also from their own community members and relatives, you know,
yes.
aunts and uncles who worked at the mine.
Yes. I want
so
you to really touch
became,
on that. It's a complicated issue. It's not just
right.
let's get rid of that awful mine. This is our livelihood.
That's
this
right.
is how we pay our rent. This is how we put food on the table. So, you know, go into as much detail about that as you can, because there are
sure.
people that listen from around the country, and they're not as aware of what that situation is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so that was it, and it was true. You know, it was, some people did lose their jobs. A lot of them were transferred to the second mine on Black Mesa called the Kianta Mine. But it was a big lesson learned, I think, for us. And that's where we really tried to focus also on figuring out what type of economy can we can be successful and can we use to replace the fossil fuel economy which exists on our reservation. So, and our reservation is a fossil fuel-based economy and resource extraction-based economy. We have two coal mines in our area, but there's also coal mines in the Four Corners region of our reservation, and we have on or surrounded by 7 coal-fired power plants on our reservation. We have a history of uranium mining, and there's so much impact
awful.
Still left over from that.
Yes.
We've had oil and gas development in the Utah portion of our reservation for decades, and we've had a huge natural gas fracking boom happening on the eastern part of our reservation, especially in the past 2 years. So this is like a day-to-day thing for Navajo people, and it is, at the same time, we have anywhere between 46% and 54% unemployment regularly. And I think the last statistic our president said was that we're at 60% unemployment, which is unheard of to most people, but it's totally normal in our reservation. It's also, we have no infrastructure, basic infrastructure, as you mentioned, very few paved roads, very few schools, very few grocery stores, very few hospitals. So it's like all of these, you know, many homes without electricity, many homes without running water. So it's like all of these, one on top of the other, it's hard, because even though the coal industry provides maybe like 1,000 jobs is an estimate I heard on the reservation,
right,
which is not even a lot.
Right.
But it is so much when we're at 60% unemployment.
Yes.
And we're
yes.
in this weird situation where we're very extremely dependent on these things that are hurting us and killing us. And, you know, there's a whole history, too, about why we're in this situation. And the more you learn, you're just like, wow, this is crazy. This has been set up to put us in this kind of economic hostage situation over many years and, you know, hundreds of years. And so then that's the challenge
yes.
of our work forward.
And it's somehow, I have to say, like, it's, when you say it to me, every time I hear it, and I do know it, and I have known it for a very long time because of the social service work I've done, it's still shocking, and I think most of our listeners care. And to think about mm-hmm. anyone in this day and age living in a home without water or electricity, and believe me, I've watched way too many videos where I ended up in tears, mm-hmm. where people literally, when we're powering our water to go to L.A., that people are going to water stations so that they have enough water for their homes to clean mm-hmm. and cook and take shower. I mean, it's like you turn back time, and you're in, you know,
right.
a time warp that is not necessarily, there's no part of it, not even necessarily, there's no part of it that's good. No part of it whatsoever. So anyway, but you know, I want to, so tell one of the solutions, you are definitely not just about here's the bad news and let's, you know, beat everybody up and shame, blame, and guilt. You're all about change. And you, I picked up a quote of something that I believe you spoke at a conference and you said, stopping the bad is just as important as building the good. And that is certainly something I'm going to, you know, give to my social media coordinator so that you can be quoted on that. But talk a little bit more about that. It is so important. You're not just about here's what's wrong, wrong, wrong. And you spend most of your time building the good.
Yeah, that's right. We do spend most of our time building the good. Our first phase of work was around just trying to create some sort of infrastructure for our reservation to bring in what we were calling at that time the green economy. So we worked on a campaign to use credits from the Mojave Generating Station sulfur dioxide trading system to come back to our reservation for renewable energy projects. And that took 7 years, but we were successful in doing that. We created a green economy commission and fund within our tribal government. We experimented with a green business incubator, and we did a lot of education around the reservation around just what do we mean by the green economy and what do we not mean.
Right.
And then we moved into figuring out actual pilot projects ourselves, and those were solar, the Black Mesa Solar Project, the Navajo Wool Market Improvement Project, and the Food Sovereignty Project, and we can talk about those a little bit more. But, I mean, in the framework of Just Transition, which I feel has really got so much traction within this past year, especially the concept of Just Transition, a new economy or next economy or whatever the phrase you choose to use, has become popular in a way, which is great, popular amongst all kinds of organizations, your mainstream enviros, your foundations and funders and donors and all that. And the reason why I kept saying stopping the bad is important as building the good is because I don't want people to stop funding or stop supporting straight up environmental justice work.
Right.
And a lot of times people do see things as very compartmentalized, like, well, this is the one piece of the puzzle that we need to focus on. And the truth is, the Just Transition framework includes a huge system, you know, the huge system, the extractive economy that we're trying to dismantle, which has many moving parts. And anyone who's working on those parts, whether it's protesting, you know, the military or police systems, or challenging kind of our mainstream worldview, like the concepts of capitalism or patriarchy, or if it's, you know, stopping a pipeline from being built, like what people are doing in North Dakota. Those are all important pieces of the Just Transition, as well as experimenting with renewable energy and economic development projects and food sovereignty projects. Do you know what I mean? So I say that so people can understand.
I get it. And there's a shocker to that when we're talking about the Dakota Access Pipeline. And it's so important for people to know this. I was listening to NPR the other day, and one of the leaders from that coalition was on NPR, and he said that the pipeline was originally supposed to pass very close to the governor's mansion and his land. And, of course, that was not approved, so the decision was made to move it far, far away on on land, native land, and there's a reason why. So we can bash him and say, oh, here's another ugly political deal. The reason is because wherever that pipeline is, which, by the way, we don't need, is my absolute belief. We don't need it. We're going to stop with oil extraction, and they're just fighting for their very survival, is that
That's
if
right.
there is a spill, it's bad news. And it has an unbelievable environmental impact as well as a human impact. So, you know, the governor didn't want it. It was like, you know, not in my neighborhood. So
that's right.
Let's move it. And that's most, you know, people, decent thinking people, which I believe most people are, they would be appalled by that. We didn't read about that in the national news. But now that President Obama has stepped in, I mean, it had national traction before that, but his intervention has given all of us an inspirational moment, if you ask me. It's like,
right.
Yes.
That's right.
Somebody's looking.
I didn't know that,
attention.
And that's crazy.
Isn't that disgusting?
I mean, that's environmental racism right there.
There
like,
it is.
All these
There's no question.
But keep on dumping
yes.
all this dirty industry on top of them because, you know, they quote-unquote need jobs.
Yes. Yes, and
it's
the whole thing.
It's not even good for the economy. It's not.
No.
I mean, like I think about
it's not a green job.
I'm like, we should all be millionaires by now if that was actually true.
Yes,
because we've been
and there are lots of millionaires
cheap
who
water.
Yeah, they're just
yep.
Problem
that's
is,
right, but it's not benefiting.
Right, right.
And it won't benefit us. It will just you know.
Well, you must have forgotten about the trickle down. Oh, that's right. That doesn't work.
That's a lie.
Let's go on to.
I believe in the trickle up.
It's
and I believe the Dakota Access Pipeline is a perfect example of that, which is like when they stop this pipeline from being built and they protect that watershed, that's gonna benefit everybody in the
yes.
world.
Yes.
That's
like exclamation point. Exclamation point. Protect the mm-hmm. watershed. Oh, that's right. We all win. The birds, the fish,
exactly.
the people, the fishermen, the children that might play in it. I mean, we all win.
That's right. And
it's not selfish.
That, I think, is the unique role that Indigenous people play, too. Despite, you know, all these 100 years of extermination, and assimilation, and all these attempts, this is still, like, at the heart, I think, of Native people, which I feel is so unique. And that's one of the principles of environmental justice around, you know, focusing and letting the people who are the most impacted lead, because people whose very life, like you said, the very ability to breathe air and drink water and who are defending those basic human rights, you know, with their bodies, that's the real fight. You know, it's not, like you said, creating policies about parts per million and carbon trading mechanisms and all that stuff. It's going to have an impact.
Yeah.
The way actually stopping these fossil fuels from being developed will have an impact.
And a lot of the times...
I'm so proud of them.
I'm so proud of them. And I mean, I've been telling a lot of friends that at 60, almost 66 years young, one of my goals is to get arrested, and they just crack up and they think I'm kidding, but I'm not. If that was closer, I would have been putting my body in front of a tractor, and Mrs. Green goes to the slammer. It's okay. For everything she believes in.
I mean, I wouldn't say it as a goal of mine, but I feel like it's definitely something I'm willing to do. And I haven't been there yet, you know.
Yeah, it's really
but
better.
I hope
well
I will
put
get
way.
There at some. Yeah,
yeah.
I hope I will get there at some time. Unfortunately, in a lot of direct actions, I always get designated as a police liaison, which ends up being my job.
And we want it to be peaceful. We don't want people being sprayed with mace and having dogs bite them,
right.
Which we have found as a country is not
right.
really necessary either. It just isn't. Mm-hmm. That's not how... This was a peaceful demonstration. And mm-hmm. shedding a light on it is just all what you do about bringing a positive light to it, because it is building the good. Those are not green jobs. And the thing that I just want to emphasize is what you just said. When the water is dirty and the air is dirty and the fish are dying, it hurts everybody. There's no mm-hmm. environmental racism in that move. Inherently in that mm-hmm. is danger to everyone who comes in contact with it. So
that's
it's
right.
an issue of what's good for the planet and all of its inhabitants. It's
that's
if we
right.
could only not, you know, divide the concept and the thoughts around, if you are a friend of the environment, you are a friend of the human beings that live on it and get its very light,
that's
get
right.
our very lives from it. So,
And thank you for bringing up all beings too, because I think, I mean, as our movement evolves, I'm hoping that it will also become less anthropocentric, you know?
Yes.
And I feel like that is also what our Indigenous folks are blessed with, too, is like they care, of course, about ourselves as humans, but also about the water, the creatures, the spirits, you know, like the larger
Mother, Father, sky. I mean, all of those things.
And I really find that just most strongly in Indigenous communities, which I feel like why Indigenous communities are have the highest amount of biodiversity around the world, you know, is because we hold those values still. And I think it's just so important to support Indigenous communities, even though it's, you know, quote unquote, not as, it's not like going door to door and doing door knocking in New York City or something like that. You know, it's not how the organizing looks.
No, it's, it is.
It's hard for people to imagine, but it's just so important.
It is just so important.
Yeah. And, you know, cultural layer.
It's almost, it's everything. It is that connection to the land, and it's almost in some sense, which I would hope for, that we're going full circle, because these are the people that taught us by living it, how to connect to nature, how to use what you kill, how to be in harmony, how to realize that if you cut down a tree, there's a moment of prayer or acknowledgement for the sacredness of that and the good use that you're going to use for it. There's so many things. I mean, you can tell that I'm very inspired by all of it. This back Eastern Jersey girl came out here, and I have been enthralled and really very interested in all of the lessons and the cultural traditions we can learn from the Indigenous people. And I want you to know that we have, this is like, I don't know how many times I've said this on the show, but we have about 3 minutes left.
Wow, it's like,
isn't it true? It's like, what? So clearly we should have had this be a national show. And since I am the Buck Stops Here of Mrs. Green's World, it certainly does not preclude that happening, especially with all the things going on. So I will make a note about that to Kelly. So we have, I have to give a shout out. We have two shows coming up, one on September 4th with Raminta Jatokas, all these names. And she, it's an amazing interview. She's the senior project manager with Honda's Environmental Business Development Office. And they are leading the way in a whole other area with hydrogen fuel cell cars and their environmental footprint being lessened. And then we have another show, which we're, we have a series that we're doing, which has been wonderful and well received, with Daniel Ransom and Fernando Molina from Tucson Water. We're doing a whole series on what they're doing about one of our most precious resources. So I think the best way to end is, what is the best way for people to follow you and stay engaged? Give us a shout out about your Facebook page and the best Twitter feed.
Totally. So check out our website, which is BlackMesaWaterCoalition.org.
Okay.
And you can also find us on Facebook, Black Mesa Water Coalition. That's where we have a lot of updates. And I also wanted to give, you know, that shout out to the Sacred Stone Camp as well, and just say you guys are awesome and inspiring, and I will continue to support you, and hopefully we'll be there soon. And for all those others interested in that, they should check out sacredstonecamp.org.
That's wonderful that you did that. Sacredstonecamp.org, and I will check it out. And I'd like to give a shout out to people like Michelle Crow, who's very involved in the Beyond project down here, who is the one that sent me an email and said, Gina, Jihan is speaking at Changemaker High School. I'm like the number one fan of Changemaker High School. And I not only went, I got some people from the Chapman Community Growing Going Green team to go, and invited people that went and got to hear you speak. And our wonderful people here doing work, like Leanne Hernandez from the YWCA. Our YWCA is like hot, hip, and happening when it comes to social justice, environmental justice, women, empowering women. So I just, I wish you so well on your journey, and it was a pleasure to meet
you.
And it's an honor to interview someone like you that's on the ground, grassroots, doing all the important work. It really matters, and you matter. So thanks for showing up in Mrs. Green's World, Down to Earth with Mrs. Green.
Thank you
and what
so
a
much.
Great spotlight we got to put on the Southwest today. Make it a great, green, intentionally lived week, everybody. Get involved. Thanks.